Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable! Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
I'm here with another bonus show for the Last Round Podcast. Today I'm in Indio, California. For our UK fans, that's kind of the east coast of California, over near Palm Springs. And I'm with Coach Joel Diaz. Thanks for joining me, Joel.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure, man, talking the things we do on a daily basis in boxing.
Congratulations, firstly, on your opening up your own gym in March after 18 years in the Indio Boys Club.
Well, you know, a lot of things happen for a reason, and I see that this pandemic, you know, we were working out of the Boys and Girls Club, working with kids, working with pros, and when the pandemic started, obviously a lot of gyms closed, and us working there, you know, there was a lot of kids, so we had to move from there. Right now, we are training here in this gym temporarily, so I had bought a building a long time ago as an investment, which is a huge building. And, you know, I said, maybe this is time. You know, this is the time that to make the move and do things on my own and not be in a comfort zone. You know, I was in a comfort zone working for the Boys and Girls Club. Had my own team there. So now I'm excited. I'm looking forward to opening a nice gym to the public, for my fighters. They're going to have their own house. And, you know, all the boxing fans from all over the world, when they come to California and they want to come visit me, my house is their house.
I read that when you actually went to kind of, you know, revamp it, you had to get rid of a few homeless people that were living there.
Yeah, because the building was there for a while. And I bought it as an investment. I was renting it to somebody who had a furniture store, but having a little bit of issues with him, I had to tell him to move out. So when he moved out, the building was vacant. And with time, some transients, you know, broke in the building. And I was always traveling, you know, working, so I didn't have time to go by the building. So with time, there was one guy living in the building. I mean, he had furniture and everything in there. He had like a home. There was no power, no water, but he was living in there. I mean, he had, honestly, when I decided to clean up that building, I cleaned it up myself. Nothing to do. We're going through a pandemic. We couldn't go anywhere. So I got my truck, a trailer, and I loaded five trailers and trucks full of trash that the guy had there. So just to start, you know, working on the structure, just clean up the mess that he had, the trash, furniture and stuff. And up to now, we are in maybe 50%. The rest is just cosmetic due to the fact that we're going through this COVID crisis. The city, I'm doing everything right, permits, inspections to the city, so it's just a little slower process because of this, but it's I'm looking for March, end of March, beginning of April, we should have a nice facility open there for all the fighters to be trained.
6,000 square feet, and it's going to be boxing and MMA, because people who don't know, you actually also train Cub Swanson.
Yes, I've been training Cub Swanson for a long time, almost, I think, 10 years. I'm his boxing coach. And together we trained some of the up-and-coming MMA fighters here in town that now he works with. And, you know, Cub has been a part of my career. I've been a big part of his career. And we've worked together really well. So, you know, he has his gym, which is the one we're training in right now. He opened his doors to me when the pandemic started. And we've been training here privately. So, you know, we came up with an agreement. He will eventually close his gym when I'm open, and he's bringing his team over there, which is going to be great. That way we can have, it's going to be very attractive. We're going to have MMA, we're going to have boxing, we're going to have fitness. We're going to have, you know, fitness classes, spin classes. We're going to have strength and conditioning and stuff. So it's, we already designed the gym. It's going to be great. We're going to have a sauna, ice bathtubs. It's going to be great. I just can't wait. Every morning, every afternoon, I'm over there working on my building myself, because I get really motivated. I wake up looking forward to being there. So this morning I was out there cleaning, and it's looking really great. So I always got people calling me. People, my contractor right now, he's a little sick. You know, maybe one more week he'll be back at it. And I got a deadline, and I'm thinking end of March we'll be out there.
Well, I look forward to visiting, Joe. I look forward to visiting.
Definitely. I can't wait for you to come and enjoy that facility there and watch all the movement and everything is going to be in that building.
So one of the reasons I kind of came today was we did an end-of-year review with a friend of the show, Andy Clark from Sky Sports, and he picked pretty much all of your stable, all of the Uzbeks that you have as his prospects for 2021. So I kind of just want to go over what's you as a coach, what's different about the Uzbeks compared to like the normal fighters you train, the normal Americans? Is it just like the fact that they have such a hard upbringing that they just have that determination to succeed?
First of all, every single Uzbek fighter that I have here, I have Uzbeks, Russians, Dagestanians, Kazakhstans, they basically have the same school. They're very disciplined. It's something that is different from fighters from this side. American fighters, Mexican fighters. I'm not saying they're all undisciplined, but they're not as disciplined as the Uzbeks, Kazakhs, Dagestanians. These guys have a purpose in the sport to become world champions. These guys are 100% disciplined, 100% determination. They don't complain. They're here in the United States with a mentality that they're here to train. They're not here to have fun. They're not here on a vacation. They're training. That's the difference. And with such a pedigree they have in the amateurs, they know. These guys, I love to work with him because I don't stress so much. They do what I tell them. They come to work. I'm not yelling at them. I'm not telling them what to do. They're doing it. They follow a pattern. And they're consistent. They're workhorses, man. These guys, they're very polite, very humble, great manners, really nice people. Really nice people. When I met them, I liked them all. I mean, honestly, up to right now, I consider them like my kids. They're part of my family. I love their work ethic. I love their discipline. And that's the reason why they are where they are. Look at Morajan. He's a champion. Look at Israel, Madrimov. He's soon to be fighting for a world title. Beck. Who else? Rajab Butayev. Shakram Giasov. These guys, they come to the United States for one purpose, to become world champions. They're not here to go to Disneyland. They're not here to go to Six Flags. No, they're here to train. And their daily routine is they wake up in the morning, they do as they supposed to, they do their road work, they got their time to come to the gym, afternoon they go to strength and conditioning, go home, eat, and rest, which is great. To me, it's a gift as a trainer that I don't have to be dealing with so much stress like other fighters that they come and I'm stressing, losing sleep because either we're going to make the weight or not, because they don't have the discipline from the beginning of the camp. To me, honestly, it's an honor. I feel like I'm blessed to be part of an Uzbek team that make my job easy. I'm here to teach. I'm here to train. I'm 100% training, and I love it. I train with a passion. You know, boxing is my life, and I love being here. I love to teach fighters. I love to work with fighters. And I want to make world champions, and looking forward to this year and the following year, having every single one of the Uzbeks and Dagestanians, Kazakhs, and Russians as world champions.
Do you think one of the major things is, like you touched on, they're chasing legacy over chasing money?
You know what? I've never seen them talk about money. Honestly, these guys never. It's like I've seen American fighters, Mexican fighters, that obviously I grew up as a fighter myself, and we're always talking about the future, the money, what I want to generate. You know, these guys never talk money. They want to be world champions. They want to make their country proud because they're icons. And they're in their country, they're icons. You know, when they arrive, when they fly back from the U.S. back to Uzbekistan, I mean, they're greeted really well by so much people because they love them. You know, they're icons over there in their country.
And how is it that you ended up with so many Eastern European blocks? Because I looked, I Googled it. It's 7,243 miles from India to Uzbekistan.
Well, the thing is, I was just lucky that everything started when Timothy Bradley fought Ruslan Provodnikov. From that moment on, I think I planted the seed. Because that night in Carson, after the fight, I was in the lobby, and I saw Vadim. Vadim is their manager. Mm-hmm. And I saw Vadim, and I said, you know what, Vadim, great fight. Happy to share the ring with you guys tonight. It was a great fight. I said, I've been a big fan of Ruslan Provodnikov for a while. When I saw Ruslan Provodnikov fight Mauricio Herrera, all these guys in the past. As a matter of fact, at one point when my brother Julio was training, my brother Julio was an active fighter. He was a former world champion. We were offered Ruslan Provodnikov for Julio. And I said, no, man, that guy's an animal. You know, he's a beast. Turned it down. It was supposed to be in Impala Casino up in Temecula. So from that moment on, I started watching Ruslan Provodnikov. I mean, love his style. I mean, that's my kind of style, you know, aggressive, heavy hitter, you know, a tiger, a lion in the ring. So being a fan of Ruslan, it happened that at one point after the Manny Pacquiao fight with Bradley, we were talking to Top Rank and we're looking into who's our next opponent. Bradley had broken his ankle on the fight with Pacquiao. I think he fought in June. And then Bradley was supposed to fight in February. So Bradley was like in a wheelchair and in crutches. He gained a lot of weight because he wasn't able to do much. So closer to the end of the year, maybe early December, Bradley started training. So when we started looking into opponents, Bradley's manager, Cameron Duncan, gave us a list of fighters. I remember it gave us Brandon Rios, Mike Alvarado. It was a list of five. I don't remember. It was five fighters. But in that list, it was Alvarado, Brandon Rios, Ruslan Provodnikov, and two others, I think. And when they gave me the list, Bradley's wife gave me the list. I said, look, I'll take Brandon Rios first. I'll take Alvarado. I'll take this guy and that guy. I don't remember who they were. I think, well, whatever it was. And at the very end of the list, I put Ruslan Provodnikov. Okay? So I go, here's my list, and this is how it goes. If these opponents are available, I'll take this guy first, second, third, fourth, and at the end, I'll take Ruslan Provodnikov. So she goes, okay, perfect. So she sent the information to Cameron Duncan. The following day, I come back, and I kicked in, but Bradley was very athletic. He wasn't an attractive fighter for a lot of fans, but he had a lot of heart. He trained really hard. That's why Bradley was always so competitive among big champions. But Bradley, I can tell you right now, he wasn't a likable fighter not even for the promotion. They always threw Bradley under the bus, like whatever. Every time they put Bradley against an opponent, it's for him to lose, but he would always win. From Kendall Holt to Devin Alexander to Junior Waiter. Every time Bradley was an opponent, it was for him to lose, but he would win. So when I decided to make that list of fights, I said, why did I choose Provodnikov last? I said, that's the guy they're going to give us. I came back and I told Monica, his wife, I said, Monica, you know what? Since we chose Provodnikov last, that's the guy they're going to give us. So sure thing. Long story short, they said, oh, well, Alvarado can't. Ronnie Rios can't. This guy can't. But the only one there is, I said, I told you. So we started training in December for Provodnikov. Bradley couldn't make weight. As a matter of fact, it was the only fight in his entire career that Bradley couldn't make weight because he had a broken ankle. He didn't do much. Wheelchair, crutches. And closer to the fight, I went to his house because he called me his coach. I'm stuck. I can't lose weight. I said, well, so I brought a friend of mine to help us losing weight. It was the first time in his whole career that Bradley did it was Epsom salt, hot water, the day of the weigh-ins in the morning. He lost 4.5 pounds the day of the weigh-ins. He made weight, but walking into the ring, he felt like, okay, you know, it's I feel weak. And I told him, Bradley, please don't stay in front of this guy. Box him. He's a flat-footed fighter. If he will only hit you if you stand in front of him. Move on him. So Bradley had a lot of anger due to what happened in the Pacquiao fight. People's threats, people's comments. His own promoter threw him under the bus. Well, Bradley wanted to prove himself. He wanted to give the fans something different. When I told him box, hit him and move, box him around. He was going to win the fight, no problem. Boring, but he was going to win. But he decided to step in there with him, and he made the kind of fight he did. Well, from there on, after the fight, I would go to the lobby, and I run into Vadim. And I said, hey, Vadim, great fight. I'm happy, you know, to share the ring with you guys. Letting you know I'm a big fan of Ruslan. I've always been. So we started communicating. It went from there to... we went to another show, and I saw Vadim, and I said, hey, how's the champ doing? Tell him I said hello, you know. So from there on, I started staying in touch with Vadim. That's how he met me. And then at one point, I was in Arizona, went out there for a weekend, and I get a call from Vadim. And Vadim calls me and says, hey, Joel, I was going to ask you, you know, right now we're in the works for a fight with Pacquiao. Ruslan Provodnikov and Pacquiao, but they train in the same gym at the Wild Card. Would you be interested in training Ruslan Provodnikov? I said, yes. Why not? He says, you know what? I met you a long time ago. I like you as a trainer. You know, you're a great person. And plus, you know, you like, yeah, I'll train him. And then we started coordinating because he wanted me to train him in LA and I couldn't. He says, would you train him in Big Bear? I said, no, I can't. I have my camp in India. He goes, oh, let me see, because he has to bring his nutritionist, his masseuse, his strength and conditioning coach. So I told him, I'll train him. And it's not fair for all my boys that I have here. He goes, I'll rent a house for you and your fighters. I said, it's not fair, because if I go to Big Bear, it's like these guys are going to say, well, he's not here for us. He's here because of Ruslan. So he understood. So he convinced Ruslan to come. So he trained here. First day, he was like a little uncomfortable. Second day, third day, he started feeling happy. And then he was the happiest man in the world. He loved Indio because it's nice and calm. He goes, I live 5 miles from Wild Card and it takes me almost an hour to get there. People out there, I love Indio. Ruslan loved it here. He had everything he wanted. Loved it here. He will go here, will go there. So I worked with Ruslan 2 fights, the one in Monaco and then the one in New York. When he decided I'm done, retired, I was here. And we kept talking with Vadim. When Lucas Matisse fought Kidam in LA, I was over there and he called me. He goes, hey, Joel, I got a couple of fighters from Uzbekistan that I would like for you to see if you're interested in training. So I went to that big gym in LA. What's in I remember the name of it. Manuel Robles was there. Legends. Yeah, Legends. So I went to Legends. And I met Batir Akhmedov and Shakram Diasov. And they said, oh, these are the 2 guys. How are you doing? Oh, we had them in New York. They didn't like it. We had them in Miami. They didn't like it. So I started working with them at Mets. So I did Mets with them for a little bit. I left. I had the fight the weekend. The following week, hey, Joel, these guys like you. We're going to bring them to India. When they brought to India, they brought Diasov and Akhmedov. They were staying at a motel, at a little motel. Down the street from the gym. They will walk to the gym. And then from there, it was Akhmadaliyev. And then it was Raja Butayev. And then later on, they started renting a house, an apartment. But to the point where they love it here. I mean, they love me. They respect me. They love my work. I like them. They're really good people, man. I mean, and since that moment on, it's like they don't want to go nowhere. They want to stay here. That's how everything started. That's how I met him. And then from there, it went from Shakram to Batir to Akhmadaliyev to Butayev. And then it was Beck. And then it was Jalalov. And then it went on and on and on, you know. And now they bought a house. They bought a big house. They converted it into like a 6-bedroom. in a beautiful neighborhood down the street, and they love Indio. They love Indio. They love the weather. They love how relaxing it is here, and it's a very nice place to get away from distractions. Right here, like people say, there's nothing to do. Exactly. If you want to do that, when I was training Victor Ortiz, Victor came here. I trained him for 2 fights. He did great. And then all of a sudden, he just told me, Coach, I'm going to go back to Ventura because here there's nothing to do. Oh, you're a boxer. You know, you got to be here for boxing. Oh, well, my friend's over there. Okay, well, see you later. That's when he fought Berto after. He got knocked out. But, yes, Indio, Palm Springs, the Coachella Valley, it's a small valley. It's a desert. There's things to do. But when you're a boxer and you got that mentality, when you got the determination to become somebody, you want to be a world champion, you got to do as you say. You got to focus. You got to integrate yourself into a camp. And a camp is a disciplined camp of training. You don't need nothing else. You don't need friends. They're not going to go in the ring with you. You're going to go in the ring on your own with your team. But if you're training and you get out of the gym and you're looking for something to do, you're distracting yourself. Either you're going to get in trouble, some sort of trouble, or you're going to be distracted. Hey, go home, get your meals in, get some rest. You know, there's a lot of things to do without using your friends around, you know? And that's what these guys are about. At the same time, they're like family themselves. They grew up together. They represented the same team, so they all know each other. So living together, you know, they have communication with each other. They like each other like brothers, and they don't need friends. They're here to train.
Do you think part of it as well is because they've come through that amateur kind of background? It's very kind of, I imagine, militaristic coming from the Eastern European bloc. And then,
of course,
for people who don't know, obviously, you know, Joel Diaz's gym, like, you're the boss.
Yeah.
You don't take any shit.
And they know it, and they know that, you know. They know that when they're here, they're under my command. They listen to my voice. And that's one thing that a lot of trainers don't understand. There's too much people talking sometimes. There's always going to be one voice of command. Here, my voice is my voice of command. They listen to me. I'm the one with the strategy. I'm the one correcting. I focus a lot in correcting and making fighters better. You know, I always catch mistakes. To me, it's not only physically training a fighter, it's correcting them, teaching them. You know, watching his mistakes. What is he doing wrong? What can be a problem for him in the ring? I correct all that. I've improved a lot. Antonio, my brother, is a, you know, he's my right-hand guy. When he retired, I taught him to be a trainer. Now he's a great trainer. It's not only me. It's Antonio and myself. We formed this team. You know, without him, I won't be able to handle it. Without me, he won't be able to handle it. We are together, and we train. We have similar styles of training. We follow the same pattern. So that's the reason why they come in here. They know Antonio and I, but they know at the end of the day, it's my command. I'm the boss here, and I'm the one that sets the floor plan to construct the champion.
Looking at the stable real quickly, because I don't want to keep you too long, but you know, we had Beck, the Bully, and Melikiziev were supposed to fight Sergey Kovalev on January the 30th, so only 2 weeks away at Fantasy Springs. Obviously, we have some big news today. Sergey Kovalev tested positive for synthetic testosterone. Coach, what's your opinion on that? You know, obviously him getting caught, and obviously, you know, if he'd have won the fight, maybe knocked out Beck, you know, and tested positive afterwards. You know, as a coach, how do you keep an eye on that sort of stuff, like in your camp as well?
At some point, we gotta be able to trust the system. You know, we gotta be able to trust VADA. USADA, they're the ones that are always checking for doping, you know. And if it would have slipped under the table for them, and the fight would have went on, and you know, something that would have happened, it would have been a little bit of a problem, because, I mean, we're supposed to be training in a clean sport, you know. And I don't think that's right. I think that Kovalev had doubts. You know, and that's why he started using whatever he was using, because it's there. It's proven that it's there. So in order for him to use some sort of substances, and I use his own natural training and, you know, natural ability to come through this fight, is because he had doubts. He knows, he was concerned about Beck, you know. But at the same time, I don't think is right. I don't think it's right. He should be punished because if you look at the process, a lot of people lose because of him. Everybody, he loses. He loses a lot. He was gonna get $2.5 million. He loses $2.5 million. This guy loses his pay. Trainers, you know, lose his pay. Plus the undercard, you know, everybody's willing to work. This is our job. And this, I'm disappointed because I see Beck training really hard. We're putting in so much work on a daily basis. I mean, our minds are just on Beck. We come to the gym, Beck. In the morning, I'm calling to looking for sparring in Arizona. I'm calling Vegas. I'm calling San Diego. I wake up in the morning looking for sparrings. So all that work is basically flushed on the toilet. And it is aggravating because Kovalev really makes everything difficult for a lot of people. You know, it's been over a month and a half that we've been constantly bringing sparring partners from Las Vegas, from Wildcard, from Arizona, from Stockton. You know, we're putting in our work. We're putting in our time for this guy to start with this kind of bullshit, you know, and he just messes up the whole system for the whole undercard, for Beck. I mean, for himself, I don't care about him because he did it himself. He's not a kid. He's an adult. He knows what he's doing. He knows that what he's doing is illegal. Why is he doing it, you know? I mean, eventually he thought he was going to get away with it because they were the ones that requested VADA. They were the ones that before the fight started, before they signed the contract, they were the ones that requested for VADA. Why was he pushing the fight for Russia? He was so concerned. Oh, Russia, Russia, Russia. It's going to be Russia. It was because of him that we were going to go to Russia. Now I see why. Because maybe in Russia, he can get away with this, you know? But obviously, he didn't get away with it now. And now we have to relax, you know, think about a backup plan and just keep moving forward. Now, from waking up in the morning and looking for sparring, programming the training for Beck, now we have to relax a little bit, sit down, lay back and think, now how are we going to talk to Beck and tell him this is what's happening? This is what's happening right now. Now we're going to have to change the strategy. Today, I told him, hey, no training, relax. But I need you back Friday. And right now, we're going to cut the sparring because he's got a lot of sparring. We're going to cut the sparring until we secure another date. And then start picking it up. Because at one point, he's in a peak. And I don't want him to be overtrained if the fight is moved another 2 weeks. So I want to give him a little bit of slack so he can relax a little bit mentally, physically. Because I cannot push him. If they give us another day, 2 weeks or a week after, and just keep the same rhythm. No, everything changes. It's very critical on a fighter. It's very critical. The training is very critical. How you bring the training to him. So now I got to focus on today. Today was supposed to be, he was supposed to be here. I said, don't come in. Relax, stay home. Tomorrow come in. You know, just stay active. I want to maintain his conditioning, but I don't want him to be pressured mentally. Relax a little bit so that when they say we have another date, we start picking it up again. You know, we don't put everything together.
Talking to the team today, it's looking like they're looking at Sullivan, Barrera, Gabe Rosado as a coach. What do you think of those?
Either fight is good for us. Either fight, Sullivan, Barrera would be better. Rosado, if he's available and he's willing to step in, I'll be great. But, you know, we wanted that name. You know, we wanted the name. You know, Kovalev, former world champion. He fought Canelo, won 11 rounds with Canelo. This guy was going to knock him out in less than six. And I'm telling you, man, that's the mark that we wanted to leave in the sport of boxing. A kid with only six fights, you know, knocking out a fighter that was a former world champion, the crusher Kovalev, you know, with so much power. And this kid right here was so motivated. You know, this kid right here steps up to the level of opposition, and he knew that Kovalev was the name to, you know, skyrocket him, you know?
Just explain to the listeners how powerful Beck is.
Beck is a kid that is very special in every way. He's smart, great boxing ability. He has power on both hands, and he has perfect timing. He has perfect timing. When he sees your shoulders move, he already got you. And if he hits you, he'll hurt you. And I can tell you this, Manny Pacquiao, Bektimir is like a 168-pound Manny Pacquiao. He never tells you what he's going to do. You never see him. He never shows you what he's doing. He catches you unexpected because his footwork, he's so smart in there. He's so smart in the ring, and he don't waste punches. Every punch he throws, he makes sure he lands it, and he hurts you with every punch. That's how special Beck is.
I was reading, I think it was in the desert somewhere where you did an interview, he hurts you when you're on the pads?
He's hurt me. He's hurt Antonio. He hurts everybody. He limits himself even with a double padding on the body shield. But when he goes all out, he really hurts. He really hurts me. He's hurt me, my shoulders, my body, with a double padded body shield. That's how hard he hits. And even though if he hits you with a double padded body shield, you can feel the vibration and the impact on your head. He's very powerful, even with a jab.
Are you still training Abney Yildirim?
Abney Yildirim is in Germany right now. He's scheduled to fight Canelo. I talked to his manager yesterday. I think that it's a done deal, February 27th. He cannot come to the States until after the 20th when they start giving visas. So he will be here. He will be here right after the 20th. And he wants me to be. He loves me as a trainer since he got here. So we're in for the Canelo fight. I'm just waiting for him to get here. He's going to come here with his manager. He's going to be staying here for camp until the fight.
Without giving away too much, how do you prepare a fighter to fight Canelo? Because he's just looking unbeatable at the minute.
Canelo's a great fighter in every angle. He's powerful. He's smart. He's very slick. And he's fast. You know, he's fast. So what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to put up a plan together, get some proper sparring, get this guy, you know, get his reflex, his, you know, work on his reflex, on his counters, and, you know, try not to stay inside too long with Canelo because Canelo can hurt him. But this guy is very powerful. This guy can hurt you too. He's a physically strong fighter. He takes punches, and at the same time, he hits really hard. So, you know, if Canelo sort of, you know, procrastinates and thinks it's an easy fight, he can hurt Canelo as well. You know, like I said, every fighter is dangerous in there. Even a fighter the last fighter that you think can hurt you can hurt you. And Abney is a threat. The only thing with Abney right now is he's been inactive for so long that, you know, I think inactivity is going to be a problem. But that's the reason why he started training in Germany. He's going to come here and close camp. I got perfect sparrings for him so that we can, you know, tune him up. And before he left here, he was here with me for 4 months, 5 months. And he learned a lot. And he's a smart kid. He loves learning and he sticks to it. And he likes, if I teach him something, he'll come back tomorrow and he'll do it again. And he likes to learn. But like I said, he's a very strong kid. He sparred Beck. Great sparring with Beck. But, you know, he's a slower fighter. So I have to pick up a little bit of speed, a little bit of reflex, because Canelo can catch you when you at least expect it. So, you know, work on his reflex, a little bit more speed, a little bit more head movement, and just be smart.
Another one of the Uzbeks, another one of your champions, MJ, WBA and IBF super bantamweight champion. He's back in March, I believe.
He's back in March. As far as I'm concerned, what I heard, I think he's defending his title in his country, in Uzbekistan. So we still don't know, but those are the plans. I guess we're coming to Uzbekistan for his title defense, his first title defense.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your time, Coach. I look forward to seeing the gym in March. If you want to tell everybody where they can find you on your social media handles.
Yeah, my social media is Coach Joel Diaz on Instagram and Facebook, you know, Joel Diaz. Thank you, everybody. All the people, you know, from the UK, man, they've always been very supportive. Have a lot of fans out there, a lot of great people. When I go out there, they greet me well. I love the people out there. England is great. I love it. See you guys soon out there. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.